from the Danker's studio on Library Square. This is The Rundown, an exploration of local news, events, and issues that matter to you. I'm Roger McDonough. Today on the program, we'll have a conversation with the outgoing mayor of West Jordan, Utah's fourth largest city, to hear about her experience getting elected as a political outsider, and to get her thoughts on what it takes to be a good public servant.
I think if you have public servants who are committed to doing what's best for the community at large and not what represents one special interest group over another, I don't think it's a good idea to pick the winners and the losers.
That conversation and your summary of the day's top headlines, including a look at the findings of the House committee investigating former Attorney General John Swallow, just ahead on The Rundown here on KCPW. And thanks once again for tuning into The Rundown here on KCPW. A little bit later in the show, we're going to speak with the mayor of West Jordan about her tenure and her decision to not seek a second term. But first up, new revelations about former Utah Attorney General John Swallow were made public on Thursday by the House committee investigating allegations against him. A hearing in front of the House Special Investigative Committee took up most of the day, with another hearing planned for Friday to conclude the committee's findings. KCPW's Ryan Cunningham sorts through some of the many details revealed on Thursday.
Special Counsel Steve Reich kicked off day one of a two-day presentation to the House Special Investigative Committee by accusing Swallow of both fabricating and destroying evidence. Reich believes this was done in an effort to deliberately mislead investigators and obscure misdeeds. According to Reich, investigators grew suspicious of work invoices and day planners provided to the committee by Swallow when they started to notice discrepancies.
He claimed 12 hours of work at the Attorney General's office, and he claimed 12 hours of work on the cement project for a total day of 24 hours. These facts, what I just showed you, and the fact that we had not been allowed to keep copies of the invoices and the day planners caused us to want to do more. And we decided that it was time to go back to Mr. Swallow's team and ask them to explain what was going on.
It took until November 15th, 2013, for Swallow to admit that those invoices and day planners were not created contemporaneously. When asked when those documents were created, Swallow placed the date at May 2012. Representative John Fellows asked Reich if he believed it was possible to recollect daily hours from 2 years ago.
You know, I think the fact that when we lay the day planners next to the time records for the Attorney General's office, it just solidifies in our mind how utterly inaccurate those time entries actually are, unless you're prepared to believe that Mr. Swallow spent 15, 20, or 24 hours a day doing both his AG and his non-AG work.
Reich says the fact that those documents were created in May of 2012 is significant. On April 30th, 2012, Swallow met with a St. George businessman in an Orem Krispy Kreme donut shop. The businessman, Jeremy Johnson, secretly recorded that conversation, wherein Swallow expresses concern that he could be the subject of a federal investigation. After that meeting, Reich says Swallow began to take actions in an effort to cover his tracks. In addition to the fabricated documents, Swallow bought a prepaid cell phone, per Johnson's suggestion, to avoid being tracked by potential investigators. In July 2012, Swallow ordered IT personnel to erase data from his office desktop and laptop computers, and had the hard drive on his home computer replaced. Reich says investigators unknowingly recovered data from the new hard drive of his home computer, believing it was an older hard drive.
We didn't know that that hard drive had only been in the computer since July 30th of 2012. We assumed that that hard drive had been in his computer going back a period of years. And so this committee invested significant resources in recovering a hard drive from his home computer without us knowing or being told that the effort we had undertaken covered a hard drive that had only been in the computer for about 6 months.
Reich also noted an unusual trend of lost or broken technology, such as faulty cell phones and a misplaced hard drive and iPad. He concluded that these discrepancies simply couldn't be explained as accidents.
Human experience tells us how difficult it is to believe that one person could innocently suffer all of these adverse technological events that are set forth on the bottom of this timetable. And indeed, we don't believe that this slew of data losses can be innocently explained, consistent with common sense. Not when taken together, not when considered alongside of what we've seen about the evidence creation, and not when considered in the context of Mr. Swallow's admittedly being, quote, unquote, scared to death after the Krispy Kreme meeting.
The committee investigating Swallow will resume hearings on Friday when they will conclude their investigation. For KCPW News, I'm Ryan Cunningham.
Utah's acting Attorney General Brian Tarbert has joined other states in asking Congress to fund anti-human trafficking measures. The Utah Attorney General's office reported in a news release on Wednesday that Tarbert says human trafficking is happening in Utah. He and 46 other attorneys general sent a letter Wednesday asking Congress to fund a measure passed in 2000 designed to protect human trafficking victims and help prosecute people doing the trafficking. Tarbert has been the acting attorney general since John Swallow resigned earlier this month, citing the strain of multiple investigations on his family and finances. A winter storm over Utah shut down Salt Lake's airport temporarily after a cargo plane lost traction on a runway. It also triggered power outages and dozens of slide-offs and crashes on area roads. No serious injuries were reported. The National Weather Service says the storm stalled over the Salt Lake-Ogden area for most of the day. The airport got about 4 inches of snow after a freezing rain that made runways slick. The Utah Highway Patrol reported that traffic was moving at a crawl on Interstate 15 earlier this afternoon. The Federal Aviation Administration says the Boeing 757 cargo plane landed safely before sliding on the taxiway. The plane wasn't damaged, nobody was injured, and airport crews have reopened one of the runways. They're also working to make two other runways safe. The number of bald eagles that have died recently from similar symptoms in central northern Utah is now up to 5, and Utah wildlife officials are fearful that the total may be as high as 13. Utah Division of Wildlife Resources spokesman Mark Hadley says a 5th eagle died this week in a rehab center in Ogden, and that a 6th eagle is there with the same head tremors as the dead ones had. An additional 7 eagles were found dead in a 2-week period. Officials fear they may have all died from the same cause, but won't know for sure until tests are done, as no one saw if the other 7 had the same tremors before dying. It could take up to a month to get test results back. And those are our local headlines for the day. I'm Roger McDonough, and you're listening to The Rundown here on KCPW. Stay with us. Melissa Johnson is the mayor of West Jordan, Utah's 4th most populous city. She's held that position for the past 4 years. In recent months, she successfully advocated to have that position be made full-time and to see the mayor's pay increased from $18,000 to $89,000 a year. But Mayor Johnson won't benefit herself from this increase. She's stepping down at the end of her 4-year term because she says she doesn't want to be a career politician. Mayor Johnson, there's a bit more to your biography, but I wanted to start off by saying thank you for joining us on The Rundown today.
Well, thank you for the invitation.
You're welcome. So you entered politics with a run for a seat on the West Jordan City Council as somewhat of a political outsider, and then 4 years later you became mayor. I thought I'd start by asking you, what motivated you initially to run for public office?
Well, I've always been very involved in the community. I had a home situation where I had little kids. I stayed home to be with the kids. I thought it was important that I be there while they were in their formative years. And I'm not the kind of person that just sits around doing nothing. I have to have occupation. I have to have something that I'm committed to and really passionate about. So I was doing a lot of volunteer work, mostly in the schools because that's where my children were. And I got involved in a community project. There was a group of people who were raising money to build the largest playground in the city of West Jordan. And its primary focus was a community-built playground. They were going to raise the money, purchase the materials, have a lot of donations, and if the community actually go and build the playground. And this project kind of struck a chord with me. My children were at the age that we spent a lot of time at playgrounds. And this was almost a decade ago, a little more than a decade ago. So I got involved, and because of some experience that I had and some skill. I was on the fundraising committee and the public relations committee, and chaired actually the public relations committee, and had an amazing time with this group of people raising money for the playground. But at the time, there were some members of the city council that were less than supportive, and I couldn't quite comprehend why they weren't more supportive of this community effort. So I began talking to some of the people who were representing me and found that I didn't agree with a lot of what they would promote, and I didn't feel like anyone represented me on the city council. There was one woman, six men, and the woman was a little bit older than me and had a different philosophy. So I felt like there wasn't real representation for who I was and my demographic. So I started paying more attention to what was going on and talking to some of the council members and became less satisfied with the job they were doing. Yeah. I am incredibly frustrated and annoyed at any elected official who comes to make a policy decision unprepared.
Yeah.
I believe that you need to do your homework in advance. You don't need to come with your mind made up. Obviously, there are people that come to the meetings to provide public input, and that's important, and you need to be open-minded and receptive to that. But you have to be prepared. We have information, packets of information given before the meeting. It takes time. It takes effort, but you have no excuse for being unprepared.
That's part of your responsibility, is being educated on the matter at hand.
Absolutely. And I found there were situations where the council members were voting and I felt uneducated. They couldn't answer my simple questions about some of these issues they were voting on.
And so you yourself decided to run for a seat in on the council.
I did.
And how did that go?
It went really kind of slowly at first. I was new to the entire political arena. I didn't know what was really going on. But I'm a quick study, and I thought, you know, I can pick this up. So I started listening to the audio recordings of the meetings, and my goal was, it was an at-large election, which represented the entire city. I thought, we'll get some name recognition, figure out kind of how things work. And in 2 years, when the council member that represented my district was up for re-election, I would run in that race. But it went a little bit differently than I had anticipated. I found that instead of being supportive of a newcomer, I was told repeatedly that I hadn't paid my dues, that the proper process was to join a city committee, get a little bit of additional experience, maybe be appointed to the Planning Commission as the second step. And after you've paid your dues, then you're allowed to run for city council.
So you're facing obstacles in the forms of people saying to you, you don't fit the profile yet. You need to go through this rigmarole. How did you react to that?
Well, I was young and I looked younger. And by young, you know, I was in my early 30s. I looked younger than I was. So I understand people maybe dismissing me as not being particularly qualified for the job, but that was completely untrue. I believe very strongly that we need to have representation of all different types of individuals. So after meeting with some of this opposition, I was a little more motivated. I am a hard worker, and I went out and bought every book I could find on running a campaign. I read them all within a couple of days. I put together a plan of action, and I committed to spend more time and more effort, not more money because I didn't have money, but more time and more effort meeting with people from the community, listening to what their opinions were, aligning myself with the people that shared my opinion to get their support. And it was very successful. I ended up taking a greater percentage of the votes in that election than either of the two incumbents, and even got more votes than either of the candidates for mayor. And I was told at that time that that must be every single person that I knew in the city that I had managed to get out, come out and vote for me. And I was still dismissed as not being the fitting the profile of a city council member.
This is an anomaly, according to some.
Yeah, okay. And they couldn't figure out how I did it, and they figured that must be every single person you've ever worked with in the PTA, or that's got to be your husband's coworkers, or you know, that kind of thing. You know, the mom playgroup and I was a soccer coach, and all of the parents from my soccer team, but the difference wasn't that those were people that I knew. A lot of them were people that I knew. I went and talked to residents. I went door to door in our community. I spent hours a day on the phone and on the streets talking to people about what they felt was missing in our representation. And I shared with them my philosophy, which is transparency in government and an open door. If you have an issue you want to discuss with me, I'm happy to talk with you about it. Doesn't mean I'm going to do what you say or that you can tell me how I should vote, but I'll explain to you in language you can understand the issue and the reason why I'm making the decisions I make.
Yeah, and you even, I know that as mayor, you've given out your cell phone number so that residents can call you at all hours of the day.
Yes, I have, and they do. Mm. And I'm happy to take their calls.
So you spent 4 years on the city council?
Yes.
And then when your mayoral predecessor, David Newton, decided not to run again, you ran for mayor, and you also won there by a pretty large margin.
Yes, it's the same group. An at-large council seat is basically the whole city, and so is the mayor. There's a greater responsibility with the mayor, but there's also a greater opportunity to forward whatever your political or other ideology is. So I thought it's better to come from a position of being the mayor instead of serving for another term on the council, as far as the amount of influence I would have and the ability I would have to make some changes that I felt were needed in our city.
And I want to ask you about the some of the things you've done during your tenure, but I thought I'd ask, you kind of outlined a political philosophy, but I'm wondering if you have a concept of what the ideal profile of a public servant or a politician is. I mean, you were a political outsider, so you come into office and say, look, I didn't go through the normal hoops that people kind of want you to run through. Is that a good thing? And then the other thing is there an ideal sort of person for public service?
I don't think there's an ideal type. I think there are a lot of qualities that make someone a good public servant. And I think it's essential that a public servant have those qualities. First and foremost, you have to have someone who's willing to listen and engage. It has to be about community involvement and not about personal agendas. I think if you have public servants who are committed to doing what's best for the community at large and not what represents one special interest group over another, I don't think it's a good idea to pick the winners and the losers. Sometimes it's part of the job and you have to. You have to draw the boundary line somewhere, but you need to be able to have input from the community as you do it. It is a representative form of government. We're not a democracy. It's not every issue we're going to count how many people support it and how many people are against, and that's the way we're going to vote. We need to be able to say, for these reasons, these are the decisions I'm making. We need to have someone with personal integrity. I think that is key. And if you have those two elements, I think anyone can be successful as a public servant. You have all kinds of people from diverse backgrounds. There are benefits to having diversity in any decision-making group.
So with your family, you decided not to become a career politician. This will be your last term, and you'll be done in January. You know, a lot of professions out there, experience means something, right? Like if you're a doctor, or if you're a crane operator, you know, years of experience would seem to be something that would be worthwhile. But in politics, I mean, oftentimes you hear about the problem of the career politician. I guess I'm wondering what the problem with the career politician is from your perspective. Well, I'll let you describe it in your own words.
I've known a lot of career politicians. There are some who maintain that desire for public service, who put others above their personal interests through their entire tenure. And there are others who are more self-serving. And the longer they're in office, the more self-serving they become. So I think you have the good and the bad. My statement that I am not a career politician is not an indictment against people who choose to make that their life's career. It's not right for me. It could be right for someone else. And I could give you very good examples of people who serve through their entire lives, benefit the community in ways that the community will increase in their representation because they have that experience. You have those examples. Mm-hmm. And with every good example, I can give you a bad one of someone who really uses it as a personal springboard for whatever their special interests are. So you have it both ways. My statement that I'm not a career politician doesn't mean that every career politician is bad.
You've made a decision with your family to not become a career politician at this time.
Well, I'm just not interested in doing the same thing long term like that. I love my job. I absolutely adore the people that I work with. And I wasn't making the decision because I needed to get away or I couldn't handle the stress or any of those things. I just am looking for new opportunities and new challenges, and I'm excited for what's around the corner. 4 years is a big commitment to make, and had it been 2 years, I would have run again. The 4 years, the place that my children are in their lives, my oldest is in college now. She's a junior in college. My youngest is in junior high, and I don't want to only have been the mayor during their formative years or only have been in politics during their formative years. I want to be accessible in ways that I haven't been for the past 8 years to my teenagers. It's different when they're little kids. When I was home, they were home, and I spent good quality time with them. When they're teenagers, as any parent of a teenager knows, you have to be home when they are home. The situation reverses. Mm. And most of my work as mayor had no set schedule to it. So it wasn't that I never saw my kids. It was as they would get older, I couldn't guarantee that I would be having dinner with them when they were home ready to have dinner.
Right. Hey, so you successfully argued to see the position as mayor made full-time and for a five-fold pay increase, but now you're stepping down. Why was the change to that position needed?
Well, I wouldn't have pushed for the salary increase and the designation change if I were seeking a second term. For me, it was never about the money. It's about proper expectation of the position. When the person who succeeds me steps into office, I wanted to be sure that that individual understood fully that it is more than a 40-hour week job. You can ask any mayor whether the classification is part-time or full-time, doesn't matter. If you're doing your job, it's a 40 to 60-hour week at a minimum. And sometimes when we're really busy or we have important issues, it's more than that. I wanted there to be a proper expectation, and I wanted someone stepping into office who was willing to commit to that. And then you have the idea of what's fair. As a government agency, when we're doing something like buying property, we are required to pay the market price because you can't have government cheating people. So why would you want government cheating the person who's representing you? You want their full commitment. You don't want their attention to be split between, you know, five or six other occupations or activities. You want their attention to be on those important issues that will help promote your community. And I don't think it's fair to expect that and then turn around and say, well, we're not going to pay you even the wage that you would make working at an entry-level position in a fast food chain.
You know, so just in the past year, we had Mike Winder, West Valley City Mayor, stepping down saying this just doesn't pay enough, really. And Lieutenant Governor Greg Bell even got out of office because he needed to save for retirement. I'm wondering if we need to reevaluate what good public servants should be paid just because of that fact that we're losing them to tempting positions in the business world.
There is that issue. There's also the issue. There was a study done earlier this year about tying someone's integrity to the amount that they're paid, and that you have dishonesty when you don't pay someone enough, and if that translated over into government service as well. I think there are a lot of different aspects to it, but pretty much if you know what you're getting into and you agree that that's what you're willing to do, then you have no cause to complain, which was the case with me. I knew what the salary was. I knew what the job entailed. I ran because I had some issues in the city that I thought I could help with, some challenges that we were facing that I very strongly believed I could help the community become stronger. And I felt I've done that. It wasn't ever about compensation for me. I'm in a different situation than Mike Winder is. Mike is the primary breadwinner for his family. I share that responsibility with my husband. So our family doesn't necessarily suffer if, you know, mom's salary is a little lower this year, but it's also not something that I'm willing to do in perpetuity.
Right. Yeah. $18,000 a year
For the rest of my life, right, is a little bit too low of a salary. But to do that for 4 years was fine. It's a way that I could give back to the community. I feel strongly about leaving my city a better place for my children, making our city a safe, friendly, thriving place to live.
You know, I have two more questions. What are the things that you're most proud of during your tenure? And in hindsight, would you have done anything differently?
The things that I'm most proud of, I was able to do a lot with our transportation network in the city. We're growing, very rapidly growing. We're the fourth largest. We're poised to be the third largest and population here in the next few years. Our city is 32 square miles and a third of it is undeveloped. So we have a big responsibility to the people who live in our community, not to place the burden of development on their backs, but to help development pay for itself. And you do that by bringing in business. You can't be a rural suburban community and expect taxes to ever stop increasing. But if we can bring jobs, if we can bring retail, if we can bring office buildings to the city, that will help to balance out the amount that people pay in their property taxes. That was one of my goals, economic development. And part of that, a big part of it, is building the transportation network. We've had, the governor has talked about this in the past couple of months, about how our roads, the condition of our roads, is deteriorating and we don't have the money to build the new roads that we need. We've been focusing a lot of attention on that in our city and we're getting ahead of the curve. It's slow going and we need to reevaluate every year where we're spending our money and what the priorities are.
You know, and I'm thinking about that changing nature of West Jordan, how it is making this sort of transition from a rural community to a developed place. I mean, an urban center.
It is. We have an economic development strategic plan. We've got all kinds of exciting things coming up for the city. We just launched a new branding initiative. We're talking about the things that our community excels at and the ways that we are a stellar example of a city in a great state. So we're looking to make those improvements.
Can I ask one question on that, which is, do you lament anything that's being left behind, any of the loss of character, of the kind of rural character that you might be losing?
There is always a little bit of that as you move toward more of a large city and leave behind your rural roots, but we are not a small city. We have over 108,000 people who live in West Jordan, and that number is only growing. We add an excess of 1,000 residents a year. So looking at that growth, it's nice to say, you know, wouldn't it be great if we were, and then you fill in the blank. But I like to embrace the reality of what we are and to make what we are the best that it can be. We were named as one of the 100 safest cities in America this year. And that's due to attention being focused on our public safety departments. So there are these types of things that we're doing. Even though we're a larger city, we don't want people to feel like they're lost. We want to retain the character and what makes our city unique. We want to retain that sense of friendly neighbors willing to help each other. Those are things we want to focus on. The number of people in your city doesn't make as much of a difference as the caliber of people who live in your city. And in West Jordan, we have some of the best.
And then finally, I guess I'd ask the hindsight question. Anything you would have done differently during your tenure?
You can always look back and point to the mistakes that you made, and I've made a few. There are a couple of things I was not as sensitive to. Maybe rushed a little bit headstrongly into something, and I should have pulled back a little to give people a chance to build momentum with me. I tend to push things forward, and I have a vision, and I work to achieve that goal. And I think at times I may have stepped on a few toes. I've been accused, and not unfairly, of being a steamroller at times. So those are the things that I regret, not making other people feel like they were contributing more to the process, not building the relationships sooner, and those kind of things. I think I could have done better. I think I'm better at it now.
Mayor Johnson, we are pretty well, we actually were well over our time. But I want to thank you for coming in and taking the time to speak with us today.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it.
And that's full time for the Rundown today. Our show was produced by Lauren Colucci. We had additional help from Jesse Ellis, Tyler Ford, and reporter Ryan Cunningham. Our theme music was composed by Tim Myers. Tomorrow on the program, tune in for a conversation about adoption and foster care in Utah with Kathy Searle, director of programs at the Utah Adoption Exchange. One final note, tomorrow's program will be the last Rundown episode for this year. But you can find archives of our more than 100 shows at our website, kcpw.org.